Book Review. The name of the book, Wisdom and the Well-Rounded Life. What is a University? The author is Peter Millward. M-I-L-W-A-R-D, Millward. What is this book about? Well, we go to the jacket, and this is what we are told. Reflecting on the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom in higher education, this meaningful treatise considers the roots and philosophical underpinnings of the university education as the path to mindful living. Peter Millward shares his sage thoughts on a wide range of subjects, including philosophy, science, nature, art, religion, and finding one's place in the world. Thought-provoking and uplifting, Wisdom and the Well-Rounded Life is an excellent foundation for anyone seeking a well-rounded education and an enriching life. I've chosen this because so often there are people who say that they are educated, but are they really educated? And this is one of the topics that is taken up in this book, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting as to what a true education is at. What is the table of contents, and what does it tell us about the book? Well, the table of contents is as follows. There are five chapters. The first chapter is, what is a university? The second, what is education? That's the topic we will treat. Third is, what is culture? Fourth, what is religion? And fifth, what is knowledge? And now we turn to page 13, and we take a look at what is education. Looking into a typical classroom while a class is in progress, we may see a teacher teaching from his desk, usually on a platform, while his students sit at their desk below him. They may be listening to what he is saying, or taking notes according to his direction, or asking and answering questions, or even sleeping. That, we assume, is the process we call education. It seems to proceed from the mouth of the teacher to the ears of his students, from his mind to their minds. Thus, it may be called a communication from heart to heart, as in John Henry Newman's Latin motto, cor ad cor loquitur, heart speaks to heart. I would say, just as a passing comment, that even though the picture he has of a classroom is really not so much anymore, we've got computers and all types of new PowerPoint, still the principle is, what is an education? These are all electrical, technological advances, but are they education? He goes on, such a process, however, can be called instruction rather than education. It may be one means of education, but it isn't the only or the most important means at university level. Originally, in its Latin origin, education meant the drawing out of something already within the one who receives it. It's the drawing out of something already within the one who receives it. So, what is the object of this process of drawing out? What is being drawn out in the process of education? One theory, going back to Socrates' method of question and answer, is that it is the drawing out of knowledge. Somehow, the student is thought to possess the knowledge already, in a kind of hazy, undigested form. It is for the teacher in whom the knowledge is more fully developed to draw it out of him, and to make it more explicit and fully formed. Such an explanation may apply very well to philosophy, at least the kind of philosophy Socrates was discussing with his disciples, or rather friends. Most people have, for instance, a vague knowledge of what they mean by such words as culture and nature and love. But it is for an educator like Socrates, who may not have even thought of himself as a teacher, to make them fully aware of their knowledge. Still, that explanation hardly fits all forms of education, least of all that which goes under the name of instruction. In most classes or lectures, the teacher or professor is telling his students what they don't yet know. He is informing them, or giving form to their vacant minds. In doing so, he may well be enlightening them, throwing new light on what they already know in part, but he is also giving them new information. What, we may further ask in that case, is being drawn out of the students? It is not so much something they possess in a rudimentary form as something deeper within the mind or character or personality. In short, the object of education is the mind of the student, and thereby his character and personality as well. And that particular phrase, it is the mind of the student and thereby his character and personality as well, reminds me of an old Monsignor who was in charge of a big high school in his parish, and he'd always say, it's the whole person we're educating, meaning personality and character are also part of education, not just putting information in the minds of the students. Here we come to the distinction that has often been drawn, at least since Newman proposed his idea of the university in Dublin in the early 1850s, between a liberal and a utilitarian or practical education. Those were the days of the Industrial Revolution, when many new universities were being founded in the industrial towns of England. At such new universities, in contrast to Oxford and Cambridge, emphasis was placed on knowledge that would be useful for industry and for obtaining jobs in industry, that is to say, on scientific or technical knowledge. Such an emphasis, however, overlooked the whole purpose of university education as it has been conceived until then. Such a utilitarian education might be appropriate for a scientific or research institute, or it may more profitably be given to employees once they have entered a particular company. Indeed, all too often the education students have received in the scientific department of a university isn't quite what is required in such a company, and so the company finds it has to train its new members with a further, more specialized kind of formation adapted to its special needs. A liberal education, which means the education of a free man, is that education of the mind of which I have just been speaking. Specialized training for a trade or profession is, Newman held, an education of the slaves in a servile state, while true education is the formation of a free man or a gentleman whose typical character he proceeds to define in one of the most famous passages in English prose. And this is beautiful. All that goes to constitute a gentleman, the carriage, gait, address, gestures, voice, the ease, the self-possession, the courtesy, the power of conversing, the talent of not offending the lofty principle, the delicacy of thought, the happiness of expression, the taste and propriety, the generosity and forbearance, the candor and consideration, the openness of hand. These qualities, some of them come by nature, some of them may be found in any rank, some of them are a direct precept of Christianity. But the full assemblage of them bound up in the unity of an individual character, do we expect they can be learned from a book? Are they not necessarily acquired? Where are they to be found in high society? And if ever that paragraph hits home, it is today, in which so much of our speech in the media is conflictual, it's critical, it's loud, it's shouting, anything but all of these delicacies that he's talking about, generosity, forbearance, patience. We interrupt and we come to accept interruptions in speech. We shout at each other and we come to accept shouting as part of dialogue. Newman directs us to a much higher level, the higher level of what he would call a free person. To form such a free man, or rather the son or daughter of such a free man, the imparting or eliciting of knowledge is essential. As the food is to the body, so knowledge is to the mind. by knowing all kinds of things, and not just things scattered here and there in confusion, but arranged in a due order, the human mind grows in stature. These things may be arranged in precise order, as in science, or in a free personal order, as in literature. In either case, they may be said to provide food for the mind. Man does not live by bread alone, quote unquote, said Jesus, quoting the words of Moses, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That is so true of the inner spirit of man. But it may also be said, on a secular level, that man must live and grow to mental perfection through the words uttered by wise men, both past and present. We may, however, do well to remember that not every word uttered by a teacher, whether of science or literature, is wise or even factually true. Education, even when it is utilitarian, cannot consist merely of listening to what a teacher says, taking notes, and repeating it in an examination according to the pattern observed in all too many universities. That is instruction for parrots, not human beings. Whatever the student hears in class has to be reflected upon and applied to himself. Let's go over that again. Whatever the student hears in class has to be reflected upon and applied to himself. It may also need to be sifted in order to extract what is true and valuable from what is otherwise. We have to bear in mind what the great Aristotle said of his teachers for all their acknowledged greatness. Plato is dear to me, but dearer to me is truth. Such is the truth that, according to Jesus, makes us free. I have chosen this little book, and I chose that particular chapter because today we have so many talk shows, and there's so many people telling us what we should be doing and where the country should be going. And as you listen, I hate to say it, but sometimes we have a lot of balloon heads. They don't have that reflectiveness that is being talked about here in this article. They don't reflect an education. They don't reflect that somebody down the line drew out of them what should have been drawn out. And rather, they put a lot of facts into their head, and then they get on a television program and they recite them like a robot. And if you remember, many of our candidates for high offices, often when they get on there, will give you all types of statistics. But it seems that as they're rattling these off, they've never reflected on them. They're using these statistics as dogma. And the real dogma of the whole person is that person's character. A person who shows, as Newman so well defined it, a person who speaks delicately because they've been working with these ideas and have taken them internally and internalized them. A person who knows how to use words because the words are very cherished to that person. There's so much of a difference between somebody getting up and just rattling off facts and figures and a person who speaks core on core, heart to heart, because he or she has taken the material, the issue, or whatever it is, to heart. End of book review.